Excelsior, and welcome again, true believers, to Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure, where I, Zach Walliner,
and I, Tavy Phillips,
go on a journey through the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the beginning, as I am the seasoned expert educating Tavy on all of this, and we share our thoughts and feelings on it and have fun little discussions. So, Tavy, you want to tell the audience what project we are discussing today?
Yes, it's Christmas time. And so we watched, no, it's not Christmas time, but it is in the movies because we watched Iron Man 3.
That's right. I guess people would call it a Christmas movie, so it does fit.
It's totally a Christmas
bill.
Movie.
And it is the third and final, as of now, Iron Man movie. And I previously mentioned that it's the last of the numbered sequels, but I'm not technically correct. There are others, though it's a little different, so maybe it's kind of halfway. These are the first where it's like character name two, character name three. There's a there's one coming later where it's volume two, volume three.
Is that Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes, Guardians of the Galaxy, then Guardians volume two and volume three. So it's technically a little different. So not the standard formatting of numbered sequels. So I guess I can get away with it. But yeah, so this wraps up the Iron Man trilogy, and it truly, really does in a way that we can elaborate on more in a way that doesn't quite make sense to do. It
felt like an ending. It sure did by the end. It felt like they were tying it up in a bow.
And he literally says that in his narration, which is also something very different. There's a lot of things about this that don't fit the mold of at least what we've seen before, right? You could feel that it's very like outlier.
Yes,
it's not
for sure.
The same formula. Maybe they're still figuring things out, and maybe they gave the director more leeway. This was directed and co-written by Shane Black. Are you familiar with him?
Nope.
I
do not know who that is.
He created Lethal Weapon. He was the writer of the Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
Start, and I think the second one. That. And he also has a small role in the original Predator. He's one of the guys. I always remember, for some reason, this one inappropriate joke, and I think it's his character makes it, and I'm not going to say it, but it's talking about women's private areas.
In Predator? I've never seen Predator.
Oh, okay.
Is that a joke in Predator?
Yeah.
That'll be a different podcast when you make me watch things like Predator. That doesn't fit into this one.
No. But yeah, no, they're all flying in a helicopter ready to go try to find out what's going on with these things. I guess people are being killed, and that's where they're searching for the Predator, and he's making a lewd joke. But that's him. And the last two are directed by Jon Favreau, and Jon Favreau is in this again in his role of Happy Hogan, but they passed it to Shane Black, and he put a very different feeling, a different spin on it. But yeah, so like we said, I have the quote here, wrap this up, tie it with a bow, and it definitely...
Yep.
That he's stating it really hits the nail on the head. That's exactly what they're doing. And yeah, I guess we'll just get into it now. You know, we're working backwards a little bit.
Sure.
We go with the flow here. It wraps it up as if Iron Man was a standalone trilogy. As if Marvel Studios didn't exist in its form where it's making a shared universe. And as if Marvel just put out three Iron Man movies that were just their own. Like the Spider-Man movies or X-Men movies that came before it where they're their own world. So if that was the case, yeah, okay, this might be a way to wrap it up. But in the greater context and knowing what we know, that
it felt a little odd.
Yeah,
because I thought, I know there's going to be more Avengers movies and he's in the gang, so I don't think it's the last we see of Tony Stark. I mean, maybe I'm totally wrong because I really am totally clueless about this stuff, but I feel like he comes back.
Yeah.
Does he not come back?
In the credits, it actually says Tony Stark will return. It doesn't say Iron Man will return. It says Tony Stark will return. So that's kind of telling you as if like, oh, he'll stick around in a different capacity, but not Iron Man. Yet at the same time, simultaneously, it ends where he's...
I'll always be Iron Man.
He says,
right?
One thing you can't take away, I am Iron Man. So they're going for a full circle thing. And he's saying, whether I have the thing in my chest or not, that's who I am. That's part of my identity. But then he throws the arc reactor in the ocean, which is also, again, we're working backwards here. We'll get back to the beginning.
We're working backwards. We're making up the rules here.
Exactly.
I think we can assume that if people are listening to this podcast, they've either seen these movies or they don't really care about being spoiled.
I was just thinking about, we haven't ever done a spoiler warning, but basically people should know, I guess we'll make it known that this goes
into
the
plot. Blanket spoiler warning in the description
yes,
of the
exactly.
podcast. Spoilers
exactly.
for every Marvel movie.
We're going through the plot.
Might as well call it Spoiler the Podcast, really. That's the alternate title.
Sure.
For our Marvelous Adventure.
Take it as it comes, and this is what we do. But yeah, that's another thing that bothered me with this and this whole ending thing. At the end, after taking care of Pepper's deal, which we'll get into, he's like, well, what the heck? I'll take care of something of my own. And he's in a surgery room, and they are precisely operating on him to remove the shrapnel that was there from the original bomb that led to the circumstances that led him to become Iron Man in the first place in that desert in Afghanistan. So yeah, they're removing it surgically where he's just like on a whim because they were doing something surgical with Pepper. And
right.
The whole thing was that he had that electromagnet there with the arc reactor because that was just preventing it right. from reaching.
Well, they made it in Doctor, what's his name? Doctor, he's in this in Iron Man 3. I saw a cameo from him. What's his name? I want to say.
It'll probably come up on the trivia.
Ho something. I probably
yeah.
will.
Yeah,
anyway,
no,
that guy. Ho something.
Yeah, they do.
Doesn't
actually.
Doesn't he say that this injury you have is inoperable or something like it's a killer?
I don't remember if there's a specific line like that, but he says like it's the thing that when he wakes up in the cave, the guy who's Yinsen, and he only went by Yinsen in the original, which sounds a little more ambiguous and could sound like he's from the Middle East.
Right.
The movie confirms his name is Ho Yinsen, like the original comic character, which makes it sound East Asian. So
yes,
they do that. It doesn't quite track.
This movie does interesting things with, we'll say, racial identities
definitely.
In general.
But yeah, so it seems like that's his weakness. So he's this hero, but he's always relying on this thing to keep him alive. And then just seemingly on a whim at the end of this movie, he has it surgically removed and he's able to remove the arc reactor from his chest and he could toss it into the ocean. But it's like, okay, why couldn't he have done that prior? Why would
yeah, why
he
now?
Have done that right
he
away?
Could have done that before.
He's got
right,
the
that
resources.
Would have been the first thing I did.
He's rich. He's powerful.
Got home from the desert. I would have been like, get these doctors in here now to remove the shrapnel from me. But okay.
Yeah.
That was a touch odd. A touch odd. But okay.
Yeah.
We accept it, right? We have no choice but to accept it.
Rewatching it. This is my first time I watched it since the theaters. This is one of the few MCU films that I don't actually own a copy of.
You really don't like this one?
Well, at the time, it was one I just, it left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
So I skipped it. I'm like, well, I'm just going to speak with my mom. I'm not going to be where I feel obligated to own them all. So up to a certain point, I had everything. I don't think I bought Captain Marvel either, because not that I disliked it so much, but I didn't feel the need. And maybe Disney Plus was.
Oh, it's because it's a lady and you don't want lady superheroes.
No, that's
no,
not
no,
it.
No.
That's not it.
I joke. I know that's not it.
No, yeah. And I think we were already in the era of Disney Plus, and then certain.
Oh, yeah. At a certain point, if it's all streaming.
Yeah. So
like it's
I've
streaming.
Dropped off completely. I'm a big physical media advocate, but with these, it's like I have Disney Plus at the fingertips. I don't need to own it. My DVD cabinet is very full. And
me too. You know, we have the same problem around
it's so
here.
Much stuff that I haven't even opened.
You have to deprioritize. Yeah. You have to deprioritize things that you can readily get right now on streaming.
Yeah, it is very
cool. Or other things. Yeah.
But some of the more recent ones that I really enjoyed, I wanted to get Deadpool and Wolverine, but I wanted a specific edition of it and I couldn't find it in the stores. I don't know why. It was a huge hit. They should have had readily available copies at Walmart, but oh well, we're diverging. But so yeah, I didn't buy this one because it left a bad taste in my mouth. Rewatching it now, though, I can appreciate it more because of one big turnoff is a plot point in the movie that happens that me and my purist comic ways really was not fond of. And that kind of from that point in the movie for the rest of it, I was like, in my theatrical viewing experience. But now I know it's coming. It doesn't hit so hard. And I could see the movie as a whole for what it is. And I do appreciate it. It is different, but I can appreciate that now and the differences and the movie as a whole. But yeah, like I said, there's still things that rub me the wrong way, like with the ending, tying it up in a bow. It doesn't fit with the wider MCU being a thing. I'll just ask now, overall, your feelings on the movie. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, it wasn't my favorite. I went in with pretty low expectations, so I'll say that it was more watchable than I thought it would be because my expectations were super low for this one. I knew it wasn't a Jon Favreau. I didn't know who directed it, but I knew it wasn't a Jon Favreau. I knew it was your least favorite. That colored my perceptions a little bit.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's okay. But you know what, though? It worked out because when I started to watch it, I thought, okay, well, it isn't actually so terrible. I think the thing that makes it watchable, as with all of them, is Robert Downey Jr.'s characterization of Tony Stark is really funny. I thought it was really interesting, and this movie is a lot more about mental health than I thought it would be. I would have anticipated, and I thought they actually did kind of a good job. I'm not a psychologist or anything, but I thought they did a pretty good job of portraying PTSD things and panic attacks. So in that sense, RDJ did a great job. So in that sense, it was good. And I also liked, again, to skip to the ending, that Pepper had more interesting things going on.
Yeah, definitely had more to do.
More to do. They start with a sort of, you think, oh great, damsel in distress again, and then turn that on its head quite literally, and that's the fun thing. So it wasn't too bad. It wasn't my favorite. I really didn't like the villain. I didn't like anything. Well, I should say Guy Pearce was fine. I should say I really didn't like the characterization of the Mandarin. First of all, if anybody called the Mandarin already feels kind of uncomfortable, and I presume has some sort of problematic origins in
Oh
the start
yeah,
in the 60s, I'm
I was gonna get
assuming.
into that.
Sure, I'm sure we'll discuss it. But even when we see Ben Kingsley, his look is weird. He's got that Osama bin Laden beard. But the worst thing of all, the thing that really, really bugged me was his accent. And I should say the accent of the character he was playing, as we come to learn. He had that terrible Monty Python trying to be American, hitting the R's really hard, fake American accent. It felt really over the top. He's like, "Together we will," you know, he's just hitting those R's. It was so distracting. And I'm like, what are they going for with this? Because I know Ben Kingsley's British. Is the audience supposed to know Ben Kingsley's British? It was so clunky and all over the place in that sense. That was really sort of my main problem with it. And those burning people, the lava people, as I give everyone a nickname, I know that it's called Project Extremis. But to me, they were the lava people. It sort of felt, well, no pun intended, a little half-baked. A little half-baked.
Sure, I get
So
that.
that's sort of my general impression overall of the film. How
Okay.
did you feel upon rewatch, knowing, well, can I ask, what was it that
Well,
really turned you off?
we're going to get into that right now because of
Okay.
something you mentioned. So I'm going to share a visual with you so people who
Excellent.
watch can't see it, but they could always look this up. The Mandarin, he's usually treated as Iron Man's arch enemy. You know,
Okay.
when we see in the first movie that the terrorist organization that captured Tony Stark was called the Ten Rings, us nerds were like,
Right.
ooh, Ten Rings. And then I think the guy who gives the fake paperwork to Whiplash in the second one is part of it. And then we feel, okay, trilogy, they've got to be building up. We're going to get the Mandarin.
Reveal this Mandarin here. Okay.
No, because
So
10 rings
comic fans
are
were
his
waiting
thing.
for the Mandarin, you're
Yeah,
saying.
because you expect him at some point. Like, if you do two movies of Batman and we don't see the Joker yet, and then they tease things tied to the Joker, you're going to get the Joker.
Sure.
And basically, that's compared. This is basically his arch enemy. But like you said, his origins were way back in the day. And I think this is from his first appearance.
Oh no.
So
Okay.
you could see a
Yeah,
little out of
I
focus,
see.
but
So
you get
Zach
the
is
details of
holding
his
to
face
the
that matter.
screen an image of what I presume is the original drawing version of the Mandarin from the comics. Should I describe it for the listener?
Go ahead. I mean, there's only a few features
It's
that really matter.
yeah, there's a man. He's got your, I want to say, Fu Manchu style mustache.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's what they call it. He's got a green robe on of some sort, right? And something red on his head. That's
Yeah.
about it. And
Sort of pinkish mask, but his eyes are visible.
pinkish mask.
And of
Yeah.
course, his eyes are very
Eyes are
squinty.
quite, yeah, squinty. It's uncomfortable to see,
Yeah, and he's
is
called the
what it is.
Mandarin, which refers to Chinese things. And so he was one of those stereotypical
Cold War era villains,
portrayals.
right? Because we're in the
Yeah.
60s, aren't we?
And
So that sounds about right for the
so,
time.
yeah, it's one of those things that didn't add up. But the thing is, over time and with more cultural awareness and whatever you want to call it, new writers and artists took him in new
Sure.
directions with more nuance and stuff. And it made him real
Cool.
terrifying bad guy. You know, sometimes down the road in the 2000s, he's wearing a suit and tie.
Cool.
He's still a very bad guy, but he's not this huge racial
Cartoonish.
stereotype.
Racial stereotype. Okay. They give you a version in the comics that's more up to date and not so problematic,
Yeah.
you're
And so
saying.
people
Okay.
were waiting for this character. And
Okay.
obviously, if you're not a genuine racist, you weren't waiting for the stereotype
Right.
one,
You
but you were
weren't
waiting
waiting
for
for the yucky version.
some form
Right.
of this guy who happens to be Asian and all of his machinations and everything. He's been pulling the strings of the Ten Rings organization because that's very, I don't know if you noticed in the picture, but he has rings on all of his
Oh,
fingers.
he's got rings on each finger. Got it.
So they
Okay.
basically each control some different power. I don't offhand know what each one represents, but you do see Ben Kingsley's character in a close-up of his hand. You see rings on each of his fingers. So it looks like
Okay.
it is showing that for what it's worth. But the thing with them, we're waiting. We want to see the guy that we know from the comics. And in the trailers, we see glimpses of this guy, the Ben Kingsley character, and he's doing, "You'll never see me coming," and all that.
It
Sorry. But that was like a
just makes
big
me
thing.
teeth curl.
And he's showing this foot. He's interrupting TV feeds and he's showing footage from all sorts of stuff from like the
Right.
War on Terror, whatever. And it's a spooky boogeyman kind of guy. And he's making threats. And there have been these explosions all around and he's taking credit for them. And then Tony Stark finds out and he's mad because there's an explosion that directly impacts him where Happy is injured. And but he wants to say, okay, I'm coming after you now. And he puts his home address on a reporter holding up his phone, which is another point of mine.
Yeah, that
The
was
guy
wild.
asks him something and he does a recording to send out there. But then he's like, is that what you want? He grabs the guy's phone and throws it. So how did that get out there? Didn't he destroy the recording? I mean, was he
streaming? Wasn't he surrounded by reporters, right?
I guess other people
and that
out
seemed,
there.
So I think other people
That's
were
fair. That's
broadcasting
fair.
probably.
But
I accepted that bit. I was like, well, gee. I just feel like you're kind of asking the supervillain to come shoot missiles into your house
yeah,
if
so
you're
that's
going to do that.
exactly
But okay.
actually what happens.
I also, not that I think his house was probably a big secret, because it's a pretty
Yeah, you would
distinctive
think it would
looking
be
house.
known where he lives, you know,
I don't
like
think it was top
celebrities'
secret.
homes.
Right.
So then we get this guy who's enigmatic and different. And even a purist like me, like sometimes I've had to adjust, obviously, to the changes they made for the adaptation. So it's like, okay, this is different, but let's see where they're going. And okay, I can work with it fine. It's not the pulled from the pages version that I would have preferred, but okay.
Right.
And then there's that twist where Tony breaks into the compound where it's all being come out of, and he sees this goofball coming out of
Goofy
the bath.
actor.
It's Ben Kingsley, and he's coming out of the bathroom and saying, don't go in there and whatever. And he's talking in more of a Ben Kingsley accent. He's like, oh, bloody hell. And then he's got Tony Stark point a gun at him, and he reveals the whole thing that he's an actor and he's playing a part, and he's just being a pawn to make this boogeyman figurehead. And it's all really by the actual villain of the film.
The real villain, who is, I'll bet this is a trivia question. So let me see if I can remember his name without looking at my notes. It's something Killian. It's something with an A, Killian. I just watched this yesterday. Why is this not coming to me? Oh
Almost
my
there.
God, it's
You're
such a
almost there.
weird name too. Okay. What is it? Oh my God, it's terrible. Oh, so sad. Aldrich.
Yeah,
That's a weird
Aldrich
name.
Killian. So
Aldrich
he's the
Killian.
actual villain. And so when
Looking like
that
Cato Kalin, by the way, in the beginning of the
oh
movie when he
yeah,
shows up on
true.
with his glasses, I was like, "Who's this Cato Kalin looking
Yeah,
customer?"
I never made that connection, but I did make a note of that when you first see him and he's approaching Tony and he's all nerdy and he wants to get his attention. And then Tony's like, yeah, I'll meet you on the roof. And then Tony goes off with the girl, Maya Hansen, and he's just shivering in the cold as it turns to the year 2000, New Year's Eve.
Right.
And he is that classic rejected nerd turned villain trope. You see it a lot in these movies. I think Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman might fall into that category. Amazing Spider-Man 2 has Jamie Foxx in that. Kirsten Wiig? No, it's Kristen Wiig, right?
Kristen Wiig in Wonder Woman
1984,
four.
So she's that same.
Which I've seen for reasons.
Right, of course. The same reason we're doing this.
That's right.
So Kristen Wiig, when she's the...
Right, starts real nerdy.
Yeah, and then she's rejected and becomes that. So that's this trope. So it's very cliche. Yeah, so he's the villain pulling the strings. So basically why we're saying all this is because that's what shifted my view when I was watching. I was going along with it. I could see, okay, this is a different approach. This is a different kind of movie. We'll see, huh? Okay, I can kind of follow what they're doing here with the Mandarin. They're different take. Then they do this. It's all a lie.
I'm the Mandarin.
He's this... That and that really, when that line came, I'm like, oh, come on. That's
ridiculous. Inflammatory.
He's got these dragon tattoos on his chest. And he's like, I'm the Mandarin. I'm like, come on, give me a break. So
no,
that was the big thing that turned me off of this movie.
Sure.
Is that they made a joke of it. And it's very divisive because of that. Because I'm not alone. There are plenty of people who felt jerked around by that. But then plenty of people loved that twist. They thought it was brilliant.
Okay.
Genius. So it's like a love or hate movie, and a lot hinging around that point.
That's funny because I didn't love nor hate it, but I'm not a comic reader.
Sure.
I thought it was middling.
Sure.
But I think because I can see both sides of it, I can see purists really, really being pissed off about what they say the Mandarin is. And I can also see some kind of argument that having this white guy who's got Orientalist obsessions, we'll call it, I can see it as a commentary, like a meta commentary about identity and stuff. I mean, I don't know whether it was successful or not, but having this white guy being this obsessive and having that be this fearsome Mandarin character, I can see what they were trying to do. I don't think it was all that successful, though. I didn't think it made a good argument for whatever they were going for.
And another thing, at one point, when he's getting interrogated by Stark, the actor, Trevor Slattery, that Ben Kingsley plays for real, he's interrogated and talking about how they pulled him in and lured him to use him. And he's like, they gave me this, they gave me that, they gave me plastic surgery. So to me, that indicated that there is a Mandarin out there, and he looks just like Trevor Slattery looks in this movie. So
yeah, that was a strange line. I thought, what did they give him plastic surgery to look like?
So it seems like as if there is a guy.
Osama Beard guy?
That is.
What, like, who is this guy?
That, like, there's an actual guy out there who is the guy on screen.
Right.
But instead, they found a guy who looked enough like him. Then they gave him plastic surgery and made him their fake boogeyman. But we can address
that. If that's it, they didn't follow up on that.
Yeah, there's
all,
stuff
the
that comes down the line that we'll discuss, but I don't want to get into
okay.
I'm gonna spoil you for future projects.
Okay.
But again, before we go too much further, because we probably already answered a few trivia questions.
Sure. Let's get to it.
Before the trivia, time to play everybody's favorite Marvel podcast game.
Spot the Stan.
I love cameos.
Where we see if Tavy noticed where Stan Lee pops up in his traditional cameo. Now, Tavy, did you catch it?
I did, and he didn't make me wait till the end of the movie this time. It was like mid-ish, mid-movie. He was a beauty pageant judge.
Yeah, he's not. He's like
10.
He's excitedly smiling and holding up a 10 to these sexy ladies. And
that's right.
But yeah, we were saying how in the past few movies it was really getting towards what his cameo is intended to be after a point where he has a funny, silly line like, "Oh, I thought he'd be taller. Did it work?" In the Captain America and Thor movies. But this one, it's back to a blink and you miss it silent cameo.
Yep.
So really short, this one. But he's
pumped. Yeah, no lines at all. Just holding up a sign and smiling.
Yeah, he's prominent on screen. So it's hard to miss him if you're paying attention. But if you looked at your watch, you might have missed it.
Right.
But now onto the trivia, because before we go deeper in the plot, a lot of these might come up, as we always say. So might as well get them out of the way now. Who is the new head of security at Stark Industries?
Happy Hogan.
Correct.
Hogan?
Yeah, Hogan.
Okay, cool.
What clue does Tony Stark find in the reconstructed crime scene at the Chinese theater?
Oh, that's right. He's got the whole crime scene somehow magically, digitally in front of him, and he picks up a piece and brings it up. I don't remember what he was looking at, though.
Yeah, I guess maybe his AI looked at all news footage from all angles and
like scanned everything and built a thing for it.
That's the best
I don't remember what that was.
What was
that thing? He picked something up. And he centered it.
Dog tags.
Dog tags. Okay.
Where it seems like
I watched this just last night, so this is real bad, but okay.
It almost seems like Happy Hogan is intentionally leaving him a clue, like he knows he's going to have a scan of the thing.
Right.
He points his finger to it before
he was pointing at it. Exactly. He just followed the trajectory of where Happy's poor limp body was pointing.
It almost seems
You know what? As an aside there, knowing that Jon Favreau directed the first two and then didn't direct this one, I wonder if Happy's role in this kind of mirrors his role in the franchise in general, now that I'm thinking about it. Because when this movie started, I thought, wow, we're getting a lot of Jon Favreau. This is cool. He's got a bigger role. He's expressing jealousy about the Avengers being Tony's best friends. He calls them the super friends at one point.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, which is interesting because when he says super friends, that could be a general thing. They're superheroes who are his friends, but it could be a pop culture reference, which I feel like it was more intended as. But that means that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the DC superheroes, exist as fictional characters.
I was like, isn't that a DC thing? And I can't believe I knew that was a DC thing, but I did. But I was like, is he making a DC reference in a Marvel movie? How interesting.
So it seems like the cartoon, the super friends exists. So
exist in that world.
Marvel superheroes and civilians know of those characters, but only in the form of fictional characters.
Right. Yeah. So like for the first whatever third of the movie, he's got this real elevated part and then he's in a coma. And you don't really see him until the end of the movie. And I'm like, is that how he was the director? And he was the director and then he wasn't the director. Anyway,
That's just an
idle thought I had, but okay.
That's a fair point.
A little digression. Back to the trivia, please.
Sure, sure. In which U.S. state is Rose Hill where Tony Stark meets Harley?
Tennessee.
That's right. I have a feeling I'll read that to you, and then another question. What's the name of the kid that Tony Stark befriends?
Well, you just said it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's funny if this I read, and then that gives away another one. What sport is the Mandarin watching on TV when Tony Stark and James Rhodes capture him?
Oh, God. Sports. I don't know. I really don't remember. Football?
Well, soccer? That is correct, but it means soccer. So
non-American football.
Again, I feel like maybe were British, because remember they asked what Cap held up as a shield when he was in the alleyway, and they said dustbin cover, not garbage.
Oh, right. That's right.
I think this game is
UK. Yep.
What does Harley help Tony Stark repair?
Oh, the one of the Iron Man suits that Tony flew over in, but not the Iron Man suit, right? Because there's a billion of them now.
Yeah, we see a lot of them.
It's one of the prototypes, right?
Well, it's sort of the Iron Man suit of this movie, though. We see a lot of them. I believe it's the Mark 42.
Okay, like the universe and everything.
Yeah, maybe that's intentional. But yeah, it shows how busy he's been, where last time on Avengers, he was at 7. So he's been busy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think that is meant to show, because isn't the whole thing that he's been so obsessively working and working and working and working, and it's like a coping mechanism after the events of New York.
An alien invasion.
So to jump from 7 to 42 is quite a lot of working. Yeah. You can see why Pepper's got some irritation around this.
An alien invasion, and he's through a wormhole and falling back to Earth, where he almost didn't make it through when it closed.
Yeah.
So
a lot happened to that guy.
He's trying to prepare for all possibilities. What?
I just gotta say, I actually really like that they let him be affected by that
Yeah, no, it's good.
emotionally.
It seemed
It
like a
gives
decent representation.
it gives a human element to the superhero stuff. I think one of the things that has kept me away from superheroes in general in media is that everybody's got such amazing powers that you feel like nothing's really special. You don't know what the rules are, like what is going to impress people, because people walk around with these amazing powers. So it's nice to see the human side of he's reacting to these amazing things happening. These aren't everyday things. They're actually unusual and worth noting.
Say the least.
Anyway, yeah.
Other than Tony Stark, who else uses an Iron Man suit to escape the attack on their Malibu home?
Pepper.
Yeah, their Malibu
Pepper's
home.
in
There's only one other
their
person who
home.
lives
I mean,
there.
thank you for the wording card, people. That
Yes.
really did help me answer the question.
Pepper Potts. What giant stuffed animal does Tony Stark buy Pepper for Christmas?
It's like a rabbit. Did
Yeah.
I miss where they explained why that was a thing? That was really weird.
Yeah, it
Was there
is.
some kind of explanation? Because she didn't like the rabbit and he kept going, I got you a giant rabbit. Like, is that a
No, it's
thing?
nothing, because also when you look at it, like, I think I'm like, is this intentional? Is this saying something? The big rabbit, it has arms that are sticking out from like its chest. Like
Yeah.
it almost seems like they're meant to represent breasts. Like, I'm
Oh,
like,
yeah.
was that supposed to
That
be
is weird. It
something?
was an odd looking, it didn't look like a rabbit to me at all. The whole thing looked very strange. And I was
Yeah.
like, why is this in the movie? Somebody should have said no to something. And that was one of the things they should have said no to. It was very
It
odd.
doesn't
I
much
think they thought
add
it was going to be
anything.
funnier than it was. It wasn't that funny.
Aside from him being out of touch with Pepper and what she likes and doesn't like,
Sure.
it doesn't add much.
Sort of like the strawberries in the, is it the first movie with the
Right.
strawberries where he's trying to
I
impress
think it was
her,
the
but
second
he's
one.
giving her the second movie. He's trying to please her, but he's giving her something she's allergic to. Like
That's
he's
right.
trying to please her, this dog, and she's just like, what are you doing this for?
Yeah. What type of vehicle does the Mandarin send to Tony Stark's Malibu home?
I don't know. I
Well,
don't know what it was. It's
how
the
did
thing that shot the missiles,
how
the
does he
missile
attack?
thingy.
How does he attack him?
It's, isn't it like planes? It's
Close.
not. It's something in, well, I don't know.
Helicopters.
Okay, there you go. Something like that. I knew it was something that flew.
Flying machine, yeah.
It's like, don't ask me what kind of cars people have. I'm going to say red car, blue car, black car.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Okay, this you kind of already answered previously. What is the name of the genetic engineering program developed by Maya Hansen and Aldrich Killian?
Extremis.
That's right. Or I think
Which
in
I
the
guess is supposed to evoke extremities, like these people are missing their extremities and
maybe.
are getting them back in an extreme way. It's all
Maybe.
over the
I think
place.
I went before I saw the film, I think I pronounced it extremis from the comics.
Oh, maybe it is extremists.
Well, in
I
the
don't.
movie they say extremis, so I don't
Oh,
know
okay.
if what the intention of the original writer was, but maybe they felt it sounded too much like extremist,
Oh, maybe.
like
Yeah.
terrorists, and so that maybe they intentionally pronounced that second E that way to avoid that.
I can see that.
How many, okay, this is trivia with multiple choice, but might be a little tricky for you. Very specific. How many people does Tony Stark save from the disaster on Air Force One? 4, 9, 13, or 15?
Oh, I think this is a trick because they make a big deal about how he saved 13. So is it 15? Were there two others that
No,
we're not talking
it's
about?
13.
Oh, it
You're
is
right.
13. Okay.
You did
They did. I
remember.
feel like they said it a few times. They're like, for 13 people. I actually really like that scene, by the way. That was an exciting action sequence. I
It's
enjoyed
an
the whole barrel of
interesting.
monkeys rescue.
Yeah.
It was unique. I liked it.
Using ingenuity to solve a problem, because he can't just swoop and
Yep.
hold all of them onto him,
At the
because.
same time, he can only hold four, right? As Jarvis told him. So,
Yeah,
but he
so.
problem solved in an instant, showing that Tony Stark is indeed a genius. Again, he's solving problems on the go. I liked it. And also, it made me remember that game Barrel of Monkeys from like fifth grade. That was fun.
Sure. What does the house party protocol command do?
Is that the one where they blow up all the suits?
That's a different one.
Oh. Oh,
But it's
that's clean slate protocol.
good.
Okay.
Yes, you got
House
it.
party protocol. No, I don't remember.
Well,
You
it's
gotta tell me.
related. It's what summons all the suits in the first place.
Why is it the house party protocol?
Well, like he's having a bunch of people over, all the
Oh, I
different
get it.
suits.
Bring everybody over. Okay, I
Yeah.
get it.
So in the end, when he's having that final face-off on the docks or whatever, it's him and Rhodey, but they're suitless. It's just, it
Yeah.
becomes very Lethal Weapon-y. It's almost like a buddy action
Buddy
movie.
con. Oh,
And so
yeah.
it feels
Yeah, him
very
and his
Lethal
buddy.
Weapon, Shane Black, but then he brings the suits in with the house party protocol. And here we go, like I predicted. What is the name of the young boy who assists Tony Stark?
Harley Keener,
Oh,
right?
you remember the last name. Here they only say
I
Harley.
remember Keener, yeah.
So yeah, you got that one, even though, like I said, the card before gave it away, but you got the last name, so points for you.
Extra points. Yes, I need them because I couldn't remember Aldrich.
So yeah, you made up for it. Which U.S. state is the Mandarin discovered to be broadcasting from?
It's Florida?
Yep.
Right? The compound is in Miami, and he didn't believe him it was in Miami. And the kid's like, no, it is Miami. Okay, cool.
Okay, well, you already said this. What is the name of the protocol command Tony Stark issues that destroys the remaining Iron Man suits?
Clean slate.
There you go. You got that, the clean slate protocol. Got two more cards left. What new nickname is given to the suit worn by James Rhodes?
Oh, it's like, oh, something Patriot. Iron Patriot?
Yep.
Okay, Iron Patriot. Okay. Instead of Warmonger, right? Which was like
You're mixing things. War Machine was Rhodey's name.
A War Machine, not Warmonger.
Ironmonger was the first.
Jeff Bridges. Obadiah, yeah, right?
Yep.
Okay, so instead of War Machine, just too war-like, I guess. They're like, would you please be Iron Patriot, right? Okay.
Do a little rebranding. But that also was a thing that bothered me for comic book reasons, because in the comics, Iron Patriot is a completely different character.
Oh, really?
They threw it away on this with having an Iron Man armor painted red, white, and blue. At one point in the comics, within the 2000s, 2010s, whatever, there was an event where Spider-Man's arch nemesis, Norman Osborn, who's the Green Goblin normally, he saves the day at the end of an event, and then he uses that to get in charge and get in power, where he forms a replacement for S.H.I.E.L.D. called Hammer, and he's in charge of that, and as part of it, he organizes his own Avengers team, where they're actually all supervillains in disguise. So you have someone with the Venom symbiote, who Venom is a big Spider-Man villain, but based on a suit that Spider-Man previously wore. So someone is wearing the Venom suit, but they're keeping it looking like how Spider-Man looked in it, and they're calling that Spider-Man. There's other characters. Some guy takes over as Hawkeye, but he's a different character dressed like Hawkeye, etc. And then Norman Osborn himself leads the team in an Iron Man armor that's red, white, and blue, called the Iron Patriot. So this is completely unrelated to that. And I was like, oh, well, that's not.
Oh, they waste. I guess that's not happening in the movies then.
Yeah, like I think I mentioned to you, sometimes they pull names from the comics just to have them there, even if it's completely different. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, Aldrich Killian, the main villain of this movie, he was a character who has first appeared and killed in a single issue. He was
really
not a big villain.
So they really elevated him, villain status here.
I forgot to look this up beforehand, but I think they might have originally had Maya Hansen be more the villain. But I think that guy I talked about, Ike Perlmutter, didn't want a woman to be in the role. I forget exactly. There's something like that. I don't remember the exact details, and I forgot to look it up, but oh well.
That's weird, but okay.
But yeah, so that, like, guy. I said, they plug in names and stuff, and so they took this minute character who was killed in his first appearance and amplified him to be the main villain of this. So then, just like they took Iron Patriot from a Spider-Man villain who got to lead his own Avengers team to just being a new paint job for Rhodey. So,
right.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
What is the significance of the phrase War Machine rocks? And rocks is spelled with an X.
Oh, it's his, is that like his email address?
Not quite, but you're on the right track.
They're all laughing at him. A password or
it's password. James Rhodes' password for the Iron Patriot suit. So like he needs to give Tony access. And so he sort of sheepishly admits that's what he did.
That's pretty funny.
In which country is James Rhodes captured by AIM?
Oh.
He's out and about trying to find the Mandarin, I guess, and he ends up somewhere and...
I don't know, somewhere in the Middle East, right?
Yep. Why don't you take a guess?
Afghanistan?
Close, but no.
Oh, I don't remember. I really
Pakistan.
Don't. Oh, Pakistan. Oh, right, Pakistan. They did this whole, let's blow up Pakistan. Some very evil. Okay, cool.
But yeah, he sees all these women and burkas, and then like he stands down, but then one of them was actually one of the extremist people in disguise, and they get him that way. Who is kidnapped during the attack on Air Force One?
President.
Yeah, it kind of spells itself.
The president. President, what's his name?
President Ellis. But, I think he's first
William
established.
Sadler.
Yes.
Sadler.
Sadler. I think he is first established in this movie, but President Ellis appears. I don't know if he appears in any more movies, but he appears in a TV show spinoff. But I think this is the first we got of who's president in the MCU, and it's a fictional one, so they didn't go with using a real life one. And Ellis is from Warren Ellis, who wrote the original Extremis arc. So it's a nod to a comic book creator. Next,
I'm
gonna
give a little hint that he's maybe not the greatest president. Like he pardons all the oil barons or whatever
that
were responsible for a bad oil spill.
Julian's gonna kill him, and he's talking about some shady stuff he did.
Yeah.
Who do Tony Stark and James Rhodes rescue from the Mandarin's clutches on an oil tanker?
Isn't it the president?
Yeah, it is President Ellis. Again, these trivia cards are not meant to be done in order and all at once. It's part of a game with different rules, so I'm sure it's not intended to have two back-to-back same answers, but we're doing it our way.
That's right.
One card left. Who is the founder of Advanced Idea Mechanics, or AIM?
Oh, is it Is it Maya?
No.
Oh no, he just it's Aldrich, right? It's
Aldrich Killian.
Aldrich
Yeah,
Killian.
So he mentions it.
He just uses her tech, right? She didn't start.
She ends up helping him and develops Extremis with him.
Okay, I get it. Wasn't a trick question. It was just Aldrich. Okay.
What is the first name of Dr. Hansen who goes to work for AIM, speaking of her?
Maya.
Correct. On which date does Aldrich Killian meet Tony Stark? We referenced this a little bit earlier.
New Year's Eve, 1999.
That's correct. In which country is the conference where Tony Stark meets Ho Yinsen?
Switzerland.
Yes, Bern, Switzerland. We see on-screen title cards, 1999, Bern, Switzerland.
Yep.
And what is the real name of the man America knows as the Mandarin? I did mention this briefly. Do you remember?
Super British. Something Slattery. Trevor Slattery.
There you go. You got that one. So good job overall on our
excellent
trivia. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Not too bad this week.
Yeah. And we can get back now to really going through the movie. I know we jumped all around here and there, but
yep.
I wanted to mention it starts off where it's right away. It's Tony Stark narrating. And like I said, it's unconventional. It's
yep.
He's narrating. We haven't had narration in one of these movies before. And also it shows the armors exploding, which it's like it's jumping ahead of things. That's how the movie starts. Then we see the Marvel logo and also Paramount. It's still at a point where they were distributing it. And then we get the title for Bern, Switzerland, like we just talked about. And we're seeing 1999. It's a flashback. So there's this conference going on there. And Tony Stark seems maybe a little tipsy. He's partying and stuff. And with him is Happy, who is rocking a Vincent Vega Pulp Fiction hairdo.
Yes.
Which, you know, I saw it. I thought it looked
very
a little
period.
Silly.
Period. Period
yeah,
piece hair.
I thought it looked a little silly, but I guess they're just trying to show like, oh, there was a different style, a different time.
Yeah.
And so then while they're walking around in there, we do see, as we mentioned, Ho Yinsen, where he has a name badge, and it's confirmed that that's the full name of him.
Was it the same actor? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's him.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So Tony and his thing trying to hook up with Maya Hansen and everything, he kind of brushes him off, and he says, perhaps another time? And you know, the other time is when they're trapped in a cave fighting for their lives. You know? So that's right. Like kind of a cute line there.
Cute.
Foreshadowing retroactively. And then, like we said, we meet Guy Pearce's Aldrich Killian, and we already talked about how he's that classic cliched rejected nerd. And like we said in the cards, he started Advanced Idea Mechanics, or AIM. And that is a pretty major bad guy organization in the comics. Don't think he ever had anything to do with them in his one single comic appearance, but it seemed kind of cool for them to be introduced as a concept. But I don't know how much further they went beyond this one movie in here, but it was kind of getting excited of what we might see for the people who know AIM and the characters associated, but it didn't really pay off. We get a Y2K mention in there for anyone who lived there. Remember that whole panic? And we see Tony Stark giving himself shots. He's injecting himself and he's going, ow, like each time he said, and then I think Jarvis says injection sequence complete. And then he starts dancing around to Jingle Bells. He's like, drop my needle. And it's some version of Jingle Bells someone singing.
There's a lot of Jingle Bells in this movie. I don't know if you noticed, but like almost every five scenes, there's some version of Jingle Bells playing in the background. And I kept thinking that must be a public domain holiday
I didn't
song.
Even...
That they... There's a lot of it. I should have started counting. I just kept going, Jingle Bells again?
I didn't even catch that. But he's dancing around with music playing and he's suiting up. So now we've seen him suit up in different ways before, but this one was very unique. You want to talk about how this one took place?
So it's something to do with the stuff he was injecting. Is that what helped
the
armor fly to him?
He's putting stuff in him, I guess, that the armor can trace wherever he is.
And it's coded to him now. And so he can just sort of stick a body part out and whammo. The armor flies from wherever it is and sticks to him. This is fun.
Yeah, so you see that. He's testing it and stuff. And then at the last point, the mask is flying to him and he does a little flip into the classic three-point/superhero landing. But then the suit blows up, I think. I haven't heard of. So it's still in the works, getting the whole process to work.
Still a prototype.
And then we're introduced to the Mandarin and the Ten Rings. And like we said, he says, you'll never see me coming, which became like a tagline after the trailers. And as things move on, once again, which we've seen a few times in these Iron Man movies, we see some real world celebrities again to give it that feeling as if it's connected to the real world.
You know what I'm going to say?
Well, I'm guessing it's about the first face we see.
Yes, I'm pretty vocal about my dislike of the comedian Bill Maher. Mm-hmm. And when he popped up on the screen, I booed. It's almost as bad as when I booed Elon in Iron Man 2, but not quite as bad.
Some of these things don't hold up.
I still don't like it. It was actually, it was okay to see Joan Rivers, though. I was like, oh, hey, Joan, that's okay.
Yeah, see her. And I think this was probably toward the end of her life. I don't know exactly.
Getting closer. I think she died in 20, I want to say, like 2014 or 2015 or something. So just a couple years before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. Don't quote me on that. Could be wrong.
And then there's also footage, which I realized I saw this come up somewhere recently in a picture. I guess it found an old tweet of mine, maybe Penny was looking at or something, where I had shared something about this one guy. I think he's on News One in New York, where he's a real world newsman and he pops up in these. So you see him briefly. I think he was in Avengers, maybe in that ending montage. Oh, God.
Who was it? It's like Pat Kiernan or what?
That sounds familiar.
Dude.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. There was definitely a local guy where I was like, hey, I know that guy. Right. But I don't know.
Yeah, again, one of those New York connections. And yeah. I think my tweet was joking that he was what tied the multiverse together, because he's also a newsman in other things, including one of the amazing Spider-Man movies, which is not part of the MCU. It's its own separate thing. So that was where I had tweeted about that sort of jokingly. And we see Tony Stark out of the suit. He's with Rhodey. He's at a restaurant and they're just talking things over about how everything's doing. And then some kids run up and they want to get his autograph, and one has a drawing to give him. The drawing is of him carrying that missile up into that portal, and he starts freaking out. So this is when we first see one of those
panic attack.
And then even
but not before he makes a quip to one of the kids. I loved you in A Christmas Story, because the kid, I guess, kind of looked like the kid in A Christmas Story. That was cute.
I was
again tying it to our Christmas theme.
Right. And it's also like an inside joke, because Peter Billingsley, his
of course, time, yes,
he was in the first one, and he was like producer, because him and Favreau, I think, are close.
He works with Favreau. He was an elf too. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Forgot all about that. That's so a great connection.
Almost funny, as if that was intentional. But then at one point, the kid, when you see things getting tense, he comes up and whispers something to him. And I don't think that's supposed to have legitimately happened. I think that's in his head. He's like, what did that with a portal or something like that?
And oh, yeah.
It's done in like an ominous way, where you see that kind of thing in movies or something, where it's like you're in the character's head and they're pushing.
Their perceptions are a little not quite with reality at that moment.
So I feel like that's what they were going for there. And then he freaks out and he
runs outside.
Yeah. And then he goes into the armor, because I guess that's like his safety net.
Oh, I love that scene. He stumbles into the armor. There's a few different ways he gets into his armor in the movie.
Yeah.
And this one was a really fun one, where he's literally like lurching outside and stumbles right into the armor. And
it is kind of odd that it's just parked outside.
Runs into the armor. Yeah, like a bike. I thought that was supposed to be a joke. Like, it's just sort of like you would park a motorcycle or something on the street.
You'd think people would try to tinker. I'm sure he has security in it where no one else can turn it off.
I know, like, what kind of bike chain do you have to put on the Iron Man suit to get people not to steal it?
Yeah, but he walks into it, and then that's when he's told by the vital signs analysis that Jarvis runs that, an anxiety attack. So then we kind of first get our glimpse on what's going on in his head. Oh, and then so now we see modern day Killian, where he's going into the Stark place, where Happy's talking about everybody making sure they have their badges on and everything.
Right.
And Pepper remembers him. They've encountered each other, and she keeps calling him Killian, which I felt like is odd. It's saying your last name.
Yeah, at first I thought that was his first name. I guess I missed when he introduced himself earlier. So when she calls him Killian, I go, oh, okay, his name's Killian. And then later on, Tony calls him Aldrich. And then at some point, somebody says Aldrich Killian, and I go, oh, that's his last name. Killian's his last name. So.
Yeah, I just found referring to him.
And that's when he comes in to pitch her the whole, I guess he wants her backing or something. Maybe
or to get Tony on board to support it.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's trying to get the money, because he does that cool scene with the model brain.
He's got the three little silver
climb
balls
up into his brain. Yeah. He shoots them with dice onto the thing. It's a very slick presentation.
And it's like, oh, pinch my arm. And then you see the pain receptor lights up and stuff.
Right.
So he's pretty slick, but obviously Happy's keeping an eye on him and showing that to Tony. And then at a point we see Tony when he's back at home, and you see a little glimpse of the armor going down into the floor in storage, which kind of hints of what's to come later, that it's like, oh, there's more of them. You kind of get a little, wait, what was that? And shows there's more of them, which later on we see a ton of them. And speaking of armor, we see it's revealed that he can do remote control of it, because one is like walking around and talking to Pepper, and she's, I think, trying to come on to him and say, why don't you lift up that faceplate? But then we see she walks away from him downstairs, and then she sees him tinkering, and it's like, oh, you caught me. And
yeah, he would have been sleeping on the couch, man, if you try to pull that. That's not cool. That's not cool.
Yes, but then...
But it was a great way to introduce the theme of the problems in their relationship and his obsessions and
well as his ability to do the remote, because that's not the last we see of the remote control.
Yes.
Obviously, come the house party protocol toward the end. But speaking of sleep, you see they're in the bed and there's almost like a horror movie jump scare. You see the armor kind of come in. Pepper. And he has to tell it to stand down.
Why did it do that?
I don't know. Something
we're just supposed to accept that there's something wrong with it. it and it's stalking Pepper for some reason. Like, it was weird.
I don't remember if they really directly addressed it.
We accept it and we move on, just like the armor's parked outside the restaurant, I suppose. Not supposed to question these things.
Sure. And then I think we're first introduced to the supposed Mandarin, what we were already covered a bit, but he's talking about the origin of fortune cookies and saying how they're not even Chinese, they're an American invention. You're rolling your eyes.
I don't know. It's just this whole thing. Like, it really did lose me once we saw the Mandarin, and I didn't have any special attachment to the Mandarin as a character. I was just like, what is this?
Interesting.
Get rid of this guy.
Yeah, different that perspective
accent,
on that.
Man. The accent, the beard, the whole thing was so weird.
But he's like,
but yeah,
how it's American. And of course it is, because it's this and it's hollow and it's filled with lies and it leaves a bad taste in the mouth. And I'm like, I like fortune cookies. What's wrong with the way fortune cookies?
What are you talking about? It's delicious to you.
So then he had given the address, which leads to the attack that we talked about with the helicopters and the missiles, and it's blowing everything up. And
Maya comes over, right?
Right, she's like, Maya, we gotta get out of here.
Shows up at the house.
We gotta talk, whatever. Right. And then they're seeing live on the news a missile headed to where they're standing.
Yeah,
and starts
and
to go
boom,
down.
There's she's a whole knocked water out. Scene. Yeah,
she's knocked down, and you see the armor coming, but it's going to Pepper because he figures in this situation, I want to protect her more. I can probably get by, but then that had me thinking, did she get injected off screen, or how is he doing it where it's going
how
to her?
Did he do that? They sort of gloss over it,
like
does he sort of point it at her, or how?
Yeah, they specifically show him doing the injections and then suiting up that way for the first time, but then she had
it
fly onto her.
Magical switch that can make him go to whoever he points to.
I can't imagine she voluntarily got injected with things by
there's
him.
No way her personality and put up with that shenanigan. No way. He designed something. This is another thing we're not supposed to question. I'm sure of it. Put it on the not supposed to question pile.
But then his home is just getting blown to pieces. And I thought it was almost like a sad moment. You see those two original robots of his that he's had as his helper in the lab. And it's like they're reaching out to each other almost like, hey, oh no, don't go away.
Dummy, right? One of them's name is Dummy.
Yeah, Dummy. And I think it's just You is the other one. You. He just calls it You.
R-I-P.
So that was sad. Like, amidst the destruction, they're reaching out to each other. And so then how he escapes that, he gets back in the armor and he just has to get away after he takes out most of the helicopters. I think one flies away thinking that the damage is done, mission accomplished. But he had told Jarvis at a point to make a flight plan to Tennessee after he's following clues about people involved in all these explosions that are going on. And so when he's getting out of there, he's coming out of this explosion, everything, he becomes unconscious, but he's in the suit and it flies
in. Is it supposed to be filling with water or something? Because I refuse to believe that this suit can survive outer space but is not watertight.
Well, I think there was something with the water.
Or is he just knocked out? I thought his mask was filling with water, but maybe I'm wrong.
There was something at the point with water.
It was
You're
a weird
right.
scene.
But then he bursts out and he flies, but it was based on him telling Jarvis to make a flight path to Tennessee. So the suit is running out of power and it crashes down in just the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. And he's like, what the heck? Why am I here?
You know?
And it's snowing and stuff. So then he's dragging the armor behind him.
That's a great visual, by the way. He had to rig a harness and then drag the Iron Man behind him, almost like you can see the weight that the Iron Man character is having on Tony Stark or whatever. Dragging behind
visual
him.
Metaphor,
another visual metaphor. I'm always looking for him.
Sure.
But yeah, that was a cool thing. And then he goes and he steals a poncho from a Texaco station.
This wooden Native American, though he calls an Indian even in
2013. But in 2013 they still have a payphone. Well, I guess we still had payphones in 2013 because he calls Pepper from a payphone at the Texaco.
At least maybe
station.
In the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. They do.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, man, it made me think, I guess you wouldn't see the need to build a cell phone pocket into the Iron Man suit. I think if you're in the Iron Man suit, the assumption is you don't need a cell phone. You have a very powerful computer that can call whoever you want, right? But that's bad because you can't just plug the Iron Man suit into an outlet and recharge it when it runs out of battery. It's too bad he didn't have a cell phone with him. I know we had cell phones in 2013. Anyway, little aside about how different things were 12 years ago.
World. And so he's now left literally in the cold. He doesn't have the armor. He doesn't have access to Jarvis. So he's really stripped down to just whatever he has around him and his brain. And so this is different. Again, this is another thing that's different about this movie. For a large chunk of it, there is no Iron Man. The title character is in essence missing. I mean, we have Tony Stark, who is Iron Man, but he's not Iron Man during this part. So
Tony Stark out of the suit a lot in this movie. It really feels like in this movie, Robert Robert Downey Jr. said, I need them to see my face a lot more.
Could very well be.
I know that's probably not the case, but man, it really is more a Tony Stark movie than an Iron Man movie, right?
Yeah, it could be, because obviously his fame was gaining with this and his role and probably getting bigger.
I'm not blaming him. It's just when you're watching a movie, these thoughts come to your head. I don't think he necessarily did say that.
It could be. No slander. Also, like we said, it's a very different movie from what we're used to in the MCU, so it might have been Shane Black's just choosing the direction, because he co-wrote it as well as directed it, so he maybe just wanted to swerve a little differently and see if this guy can take care of himself when he's not with all of his advantages logically.
It also felt a little more, I don't know, something about the kid being there, a little more like family friendly or something. I don't know what they were going but it's a tone. There's a tone.
It's funny you mentioned that about family friendly with the kid, because, okay, so he's in a shed looking for technology, anything he can, and that's when the kid comes and discovers him. But he's talking to this kid, and again, like we mentioned in, I think, even Iron Man 2, there was some movement, or at least during the first Iron Man, there was a character arc and progression, but then there seemed to be some regression. And here, the way he talks to this kid, so you're talking about family friendly, but the kid's revealing
He's not nice.
Backstory about, oh, his mom's out doing this, and his dad left for Scratchers, but then that was like 10 years ago or something, and he hasn't come back. And then Tony's rebuttal to that is dad's leave, no need to be blank about it, being again, the same word that Shane Black used in
that we're not saying from before. One of Shane Black's favorite words.
Again, really, was that necessary? I feel he's very harsh to the kid a lot of the times.
You're right. They did dial back Tony a little bit. For all that he evolves as a person, he keeps bouncing back and forth.
Being a real jerk to the kid.
Yeah.
Needlessly.
P.S. The kid greets him. We meet the kid. Meet Harley. He's got a potato gun. Is he also carrying a newspaper for no reason? Am I crazy? He's just like a little kid walking around with a newspaper with Tony Stark presumed dead or whatever.
He shows it to him. He has that handy.
That's convenient.
Hey, they think you're dead. Yeah.
The good thing that kid's walking around with the newspaper.
I guess he keeps up with current events. He's got to take care of himself to a degree. Oh,
that's true. The kid's left to his own devices. This is true.
Literally speaking.
That's right.
Yeah, I was going to mention, though, Shane Black also did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I think was the start of the Robert Downey Jr. renaissance, a little before Iron Man came along. So he was in that, and I think maybe that was well received, and then maybe that led to him becoming Iron Man, and then everything from there.
It makes sense that they would bring him in to direct this one, I suppose.
Maybe Downey suggested him. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be. So then he gets with this kid, and there's sort of a nice little bond where he's working with this kid, and he's depending on the kid, and he has him getting materials to try to get the armor charged, but he's still being jerky to him on the way and stuff.
He is. Where's my sandwich? I like the relationship between them. I thought that was fun. It felt very throwback, very sort of 90s reluctant alliance between somebody and a kid. Kid sidekick gets involved somehow, and the hero doesn't want it, but eventually they bond. So I don't know. That was fun. That was a fun throwback.
But then also, in fairness, the kid at times is pushing it, because he's talking about New York and this stuff, and he sees it's triggering him another panic attack, but he keeps like, is he not taking it? He's like, whoa, what about New York? And how about this? Blah, 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 blah.
That's what a kid would do, though.
Yeah. I don't know, but I would think...
I mean, your typical kid, I think.
This kid seems like he's got a fair head on his shoulders doing all this tech stuff, but he's still, I don't know, maybe he just lacks common sense or social skills, who knows, but...
It might be, maybe he's pushing him to see... Because he does show sympathy to him later on. It's kind of sweet. It's kind of sweet the way he sort of supports him in their, panicky moments.
He's helping Tony, too. Well, as much as Tony's helping him.
But you're right. He's being a jerk as well. And you know what? Tony earned it. So maybe he's
good
as he gets.
I did make a note here. Did you notice the vice president in this movie? Do you know that actor?
Miguel Ferrer. Yes, I do.
Yeah, he's been in a lot. I wrote down Hot Shots Part 2 because I always remember a moment from that where he just looks at the camera and goes, "War, it's fantastic."
I wrote down something like, you could tell right away that the vice president was a secret bad guy somehow. And I don't know if it's because just the fact of Miguel Ferrer or whatever, but I knew right away there's something going on with that vice president.
Yes. And then
before I forget, 3 Tony Stark nicknames I wrote down in this movie. I thought this was going to be a whole thing, but now apparently Tony Stark is done. So I don't know. But in this movie, he calls somebody Sir Lawrence Olivier. Very cute. Ponytail Express and Ringo. He calls Trevor Ringo at one point.
Well, yeah. So I'm guessing Lawrence Olivier was also Trevor, probably, because he's an actor.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Ponytail Express, I don't remember.
It's probably a henchman.
He's
all tied up on the mattress rack.
Yeah.
And then another person you might recognize when he's kind of incognito and he's trying to upload something or whatever, he sees this news van and he meets this guy working on it. I forgot the name offhand, but it's Adam Pally. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah. Adam Pally. Yeah. As a super fan with the tattoo, right?
Yeah, the tattoo.
He loves Tony Stark. Yeah, that was a funny little thing.
Yeah, I pointed that out to Penny because he's in the Sonic the Hedgehog movies too. So I'm like, do you know who that is? She couldn't recognize him offhand, but then I pointed that out to her. But yeah, then he gets a car and drives from Tennessee to Florida. But I'm like, how much mileage is that? How much time is taken up by the drive? That's not close. That's not like a state
or
two.
I stopped the movie at this point because I think I was making a note and I sort of, my attention wandered or something. And I looked up and last I remembered, he was in Tennessee and suddenly he was in Miami. And I said, wait, why is he, how did he get there?
Yeah,
is it important? Then I looked up on the Wikipedia and it just said he gets to Miami. I was like, oh, okay, I guess he just goes to Miami.
What was going on in that time? That should have taken a fair amount of time. Oh, I guess we kind of glossed over when he's investigating further. He's fighting some of the lava people, as you call them. He's looking at the wife or the mother, I think maybe, of one of the victims. And she's like, here's your damn files. And he's like, I don't think I'm who you're waiting for. But he's looking. And then this woman comes to arrest him, but she reveals herself as one of them. There's a whole fight ensues. And he's again using ingenuity to try to beat her. And file got kicked aside, which he can pick up later. But he has a thing with gasoline or lighter fluid or whatever. And then the microwave going off and he's battling her. And he causes an explosion that I guess is enough to damage her and her ability to explode.
But also, not enough to damage the door of an ice fridge. Did you notice he just hid behind a little flimsy metal door that would have ice, like an ice fridge in a gas station?
Yeah,
that's what he uses to shield himself. I'm like, oh, is that made out of vibranium or something? Like, that's a strong ice fridge, but okay.
Yeah.
We don't question.
And also, I guess we should point out at the sites that they do show of these extremist explosions, the victims are vaporized and you see their shadows. I guess that's like a Hiroshima thing that I guess kind of happened there. Maybe that's a nod to that, where these shadows were left behind. So yeah, then he's analyzed that and he's counting the shadows and how many people were supposed to be there, including the guy who blew up. And he sees there's no shadow for him. And that's where he really starts putting those pieces together in his investigation. And so, yeah, like you said, he's in Florida now. And again, he's without armor, but it shows his resourcefulness. He goes to a hardware store like a Home Depot or something. He's grabbing all these things and he puts these contraptions together that are almost mimicking some of the functions of the armor, but in a very makeshift down home kind of simple.
I love that stuff. I love Tony just showing.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool
stuff he can do with very little.
Yeah, like at one point he even throws Christmas ornaments, like the ball ornaments, I think, and then they explode and pop stuff out at guys.
Again, playing into our Christmas theme. I love it.
Yeah, and actual jingle bells are playing during that, I think. Not the song, but you hear
the sound of bells. Yes.
And that's when we already said he discovers Slattery and the whole deal. And this is what I wondered. He goes into the room and there's a bed and he pulls back the covers and these two women are there and they're like, oh, what were they doing both lying completely under the blanket? Like their heads were under there. It's not like they're knocked out on the blanket.
I don't think we're supposed to imagine, or maybe we are supposed to imagine too much what they are possibly doing.
But no, they're not doing anything. You know,
they're
supposed to imagine that they're there and they were with Slattery and whatever.
It's very unnatural.
But the fact that they're still, when he grabs that blanket, there's not any movement or anything implied there. But he
pulls it up
and reveals their whole selves. So like... You were just lying still under the
It makes
bike.
No sense in real life.
Yeah.
It was completely unnatural.
But what
but
would
again,
one of these be without my little nitpicks?
No, we need to nitpick. This is part of the fun. Why have a podcast if it's not about nitpicks?
So then we see the twist that we already addressed. Then we see Maya Hansen, and she's with Killian, and they're talking about it. And at one point, she kind of has a hero turn where she's like, I'm done with this. And she's pointing something at her neck that would, I guess, take her out where she thinks, you need me in order to finish and perfect this research. And then Killian just shoots her, and she's like, shocked and dead. So we see that she was in on it. That's where we kind of learn when Tony's tied up on that mattress thing, that she was a part of it. And also, while
Killian's always sticking his arm into people's armor and heating it up. He's always like trying to
smoke
him out.
They lure Rhodey out of the armor by one of them presses along his chest and it's really heating up. I mean, he's in the armor.
It's
already tight already. Then it's like heating up your abdomen or something to serious degrees. And what can you do?
Am I mistaken? Are you a turtle owner?
No, yeah, we are. We've known that
we're both turtle owners.
Right,
ready
to slider. You have too, right?
I have a Chinese box turtle.
Oh,
30
okay,
years. No. This next month, it'll be 30
years. Okay, well, yeah.
They
I
live forever.
Turtles.
Well, there's a line in the movie that I found offensive as a turtle owner.
Oh.
Killian says, feeling a little like a little turtle cooking in his little turtle suit. I was like, how dare you? We don't cook turtles around here.
Why wouldn't he say shell? What is he, turtle
suit? It's so awkward. It's a weird line. And as a turtle owner, I don't like it. And I don't approve.
keep the metaphor straight. Like, oh, you're like a little turtle. You're just trapped in your shell.
Shell, right.
Turtle suit. Like,
turtles don't have a suit.
Unless you're talking about Dana Carvey, the master of disguise. He was putting on a turtle suit.
That's
turtle,
a whole other turtle. Podcast, Zach. That is a completely different podcast.
Sure. But then I wrote a note about how far or like how long does it take to drive to Tennessee to Florida? But then that actually comes up. I don't know if Stark asks it of the henchman, and one guy has it off the top of his head, 832 miles between.
Oh, wow.
So we do hear that my question was answered. But then that's because he's waiting, because everything should have kicked in to fully charge his armor. So it's shooting right off from that barn to him, which Harley has to open the door for some of it, or it's banging against the door. But if it's 832 miles from one point to the other, then how fast must it be traveling? Like 832
miles. I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, that's
even if it's
fast.
Going at 832 miles an hour, it would take an hour to get there. So it's much faster than that somehow.
Didn't look like it was that. It was a matter of seconds. So wow. Wow, right, that suit.
It must have been going insanely fast, and it didn't look like it was being portrayed that fast. He is waiting, thinking it's like 3, 2, 1, and it's going to come to him. Taking a little longer than he expected, but still, it travels insanely fast.
It's like 6 seconds instead of 1 second or something.
Yeah, and so
like
then,
crazy. You
know, he gets busted out of things, and then Rhodey's on his own. He's doing his own action-adventure stuff, and then that's when we see that Killian can breathe fire like a dragon.
Oh, yeah, that's wild.
Like the dragon's on his shirt. And Rhodey and the audience are just as surprised as each other. One funny moment. Tony's taking out the bad guys and stuff, and then one henchman has a gun point, and he's like, you know what, screw this, these guys are weird.
I don't know, these guys are weird. I don't like it. So he lets them go, which I respected that.
Then also I wrote here, there's another actress. It is an actress, but the other ones were mainly actors, male, but there's an actress in here that pops up that I wondered if you caught that this is a very early role for them.
I was spoiled for this in Wikipedia, I'm afraid. I think we're talking about Jenna Ortega.
That's
as
correct.
The vice president's daughter.
Exactly.
Yeah, I did not notice it at first, because when I read that in the Wikipedia, I was very surprised.
Yeah, I showed
but
it
now,
to...
now that I think back, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I showed it to my wife and Penny, and I paused it, and they still weren't getting it. I was like, she's got her own series, she plays the title character, and then eventually, I think my wife got it. It's quick.
She was very young.
Yeah, she doesn't even say a line, so I don't think she's even credited. Right. And we see also it pans down when they're dealing with the vice president, and it shows she's missing a leg, which is indicating obviously that the vice president,
his motivation.
Yeah, he wants Extremis to use on her, get her limb back. And we saw the action scenes. Like I said, it's like a buddy action movie, like Lethal Weapon. But then the house party protocol is activated, like we mentioned. All these different armors come flying from Tony's compound, and so it shows truly the extent of what his capabilities he's made of the remote control. Almost like when Whiplash wanted drones instead of piloted arms in the second one. So now he's kind of got these all as his own drones, and they all have different functions, basically. But you see some cool things, how they operate. Sometimes they're flying off in pieces, arms sending this way and that way. At one point, we see a really large one, and it runs, and it leans itself under rubble, and it sort of like strengthens.
Right.
It sort of almost has like a spinal cord that it tightens up, and a thing comes on to hold the weight. Now, I remember, and I don't think I was alone on this, we saw a really large Iron Man armor. Us comic nerds were thinking this was a specific type of well-known Iron Man armor, but it was proven not to be the case, because we do see that very armor later. I'm not going to give more details.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it, but we'll get there when we get there. But it was shown this is not that one.
He called the different armor different names. There's
I was going to mention that to you.
Igor,
as well.
Heartbreaker, Red Snapper, I wrote down.
Wait, what's the first one you
they
said?
They all have Igor.
Oh, yeah, that big one that is word. Igor. And then he says something Igor. About Heartbreaker, go help out Red Snapper. So it shows, even with his robots, he gives them nicknames.
Yeah, everybody's got a name. As somebody who loves nicknames, I respect it.
And we see that the president's in the Iron Patriot armor after we saw the whole scuffle that led to that thing with the barrel of monkeys, where someone was in the Iron Patriot armor, and it was one of the main henchmen that has Extremis that was running through the movie, and he's chewing gum throughout it, and you feel like, is there something to that? Because he asks one guy that's on a bench and holding documents, can you regulate? And then you see flashbacks or something with Killian, if you cannot regulate, you'll be removed from the programs. So I guess
addiction will not be tolerated or something.
Yeah, it's about keeping your powers under control, I guess. And so the guy didn't regulate and he blew up, but then I guess maybe the gum chewing helped the one guy to regulate.
Maybe there's a nicotine gum version of whatever it is he does to these people. Yeah. But it's
then
weird.
That guy, he gets, I think, a hole blown in his chest.
Yep.
Maybe by Iron Man when he comes to save the day on Air Force One. So the president was put in the armor after we talked about when they captured the president. Killian's talking to him about his shady stuff. And that's why Rhodey and Tony are trying to rescue them and use using all these armors and all these ways. And you see, actually, Tony kind of jumps from armor to armor at a point, because even though they're drones, he's able to like inhabit anyone he wants. So one comes,
right,
and he gets in it. Then Killian's fighting him and he knocks a piece off. He hops into another one. So it's cool action in the context of all these armors and this fight scene.
I wrote down the army of empty suits reminds me of the magically animated armor at the end of Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Oh, favorite movie
of mine. Just a little connection I made there.
Nice.
Yeah. I like that. In that movie, they're empty knights in shining armor type of armor, and they're fighting Nazis. So,
I don't remember much about that movie. I know Angela Lansbury, and it's
Mary
Poppins with animation and live action, but I don't remember much more than that.
There's fighting of Nazis and animating of armor.
Nice.
Both Disney properties.
Yeah. And at one point, when he seems to have Tony pinned down, he shoots out this blade from Glenn. He ends up slicing Killian's arm off.
Oh, right.
I don't know if it's spoiling to say that this is not the only arm that gets removed in coming movies. So I guess
is this about Thanos and the glove? Don't tell me.
No, that's a way off. This is something.
Okay.
Else.
I don't know then. That's intriguing. Okay.
It's done as a nod because we're in phase two now. You know, after Avengers is phase two. And it's a nod to something from the second part of another well-known, huge blockbuster nerd property where someone loses an arm or a hand.
Oh, wow. Is this a Star Wars thing?
Yes. So Kevin Feige is a huge Star Wars fan. And Empire Strikes Back, that happens. And this is phase two. So it's the second one, kind of like that. So
I get it.
There becomes
a
running dismemberment theme. So just like with Stan, see if you can catch where people lose.
see the dismemberment. A new segment, literally, for the podcast.
Maybe. And then all this stuff's happening. Pepper, she gets injected with it, and he's holding her hostage, which is his motivation. He's like, I've given you desperation like you did when you left me on the roof in Switzerland.
Right.
So he's trying to save her. Then she's in the action. Like you said, she's given stuff to do where she's with it. And then she's going to fall at one point. Tony says, I'll catch you, I promise. And then she falls into the fire. She has a big fall into fire, and he thinks he's lost her. It's like, that was not a solid promise.
And I mean, I didn't really think they were killing her off, but a part of me was like, Bucky fell to his death and he was really supposedly dead. I mean, I don't know, maybe Bucky comes back. Don't tell me. Who's to say?
I try to
but
keep,
I was like, we're not gonna kill
to...
off Gwyneth Paltrow's character, are they?
Yeah, I try to.
And they didn't, but they fooled me for a sec.
Yeah, I try to do my best to not give future details away because then it takes away the fun of us talking about it.
That's true. I do like things to unfold.
Okay, and we already mentioned his shouting, I am the Mandarin, which was annoying. But then out of him saying that is when we get Pepper's action moment where he's all grandiose making that announcement and she kind of takes him out.
Yep. Great.
And then we get to the clean slate because he's, again, this is the thing where he's like, I'm sacrificing because of how much I love you, basically, with Pepper, and you're the thing that I don't want to lose and whatever. So because of her concern with his obsession, he activates clean slate where Jarvis puts in a command. And then we start seeing all these armors that are flying around in this climactic action sequence are just exploding like fireworks. It's kind of evocative of that. So it's like, that's his way of saying, I'm done being Iron Man.
I thought, is that all of the suits? Is it meant to be literally every suit? All the Iron Man suits? Or
I think that's the intention, at least at this point in Tony Stark's journey, where it then begins to wrap up the movie. And he literally mentions his journey. He said, my journey has reached its end. And like we said, he gets the heart thing taken care of, which we asked, why hasn't he done that before? And then we get back to Happy, John Favreau in the hospital, and he's pointing at something. Right. And it turns out he just wants to put on his Downton Abbey, which was
Downton Abbey.
Cute. And then we see in this final narration, things are, like we said, they're wrapping up at a bow. We see Harley and he walks in the garage and it's like a full-on lab. He just really set him up.
That was great.
He cared about the kid and he rewards him for his help. He tosses the arc reactor in the water. Like we said, he wraps it up with a bow. Literally, he says those words. But he does save the old robots. So that was nice. He pulls them out of the water. So it was nice to see that he cares about those still, even as he tosses away the arc
reactor.
And then, like we said, he says, one thing you can't take away, I am Iron Man. And that's how it ends. And again, like I said, if it was just its own trilogy of films, okay, great way to end it and move on, make different movies. But this is within the cinematic universe and we know they're gonna make more Avengers films. What are you doing? He blows up all the armors and then it's like, we're gonna see him in armor again. Like,
I know you're gonna just build another one, Tony.
Yeah,
you're Tony Stark. You can build more.
He's promising Pepper he's done. He's saying he's done, even though it's still technically in him as being Iron Man.
It does feel like a very temporary happy ending.
Yeah, like
there. Like again, we know that's not gonna.
Yeah, taken out of the context of a greater universe, it seems like a perfectly fine way to wrap up a trilogy. But knowing that that was not the situation, it just didn't ring true.
Yeah.
But then again, even as we end it, it shows it's different from the movies because it goes into like a visual montage over the.
Oh, But... yeah, from all the movies. It's so, not just this movie. It's very like summing up Iron Man with all these greatest hit moments from all three movies.
That finality where it's like, oh, let's go back to where it started and all this and the things he's done. And in that montage, well, let me just throw it over to Penny's corner. Penny, there was something you wanted to mention?
Hi, my name is Penny, and this is Penny's Corner. Today, we're talking about Iron Man 3. And my fun fact is, in the end transition thing, where it shows all the pictures and stuff of, like, Iron Man throughout all the series, including the third movie and stuff, they show a brief, slight picture that you may not be able to see within a blink of an eye, where it shows the Peanuts Christmas album from Charlie Brown. And I just thought I'd point that out because I noticed it when we were watching the movie, and I thought it was really cool. So yeah, that's why I added it in here. But anyways, that's all for Penny Corner today. See you next time, guys. Bye.
Yeah, and I didn't even catch that. I was very impressed that Penny noticed that, because it is a quick little thing seeing that album by the record player where you can see the Peanuts characters. I just didn't notice that at all, but she caught it. She's got a good eye, I guess.
Great eye.
And I think it was probably the holiday one, because again, it was during the
holiday. Yeah, because it's a holiday movie.
And so in this one, there is no mid-credits scene, because it just has the big montage, and then it just goes right to the main credits, and we get through it, and then the audio starts. We get some more narration before the credits end. And do you want to say what happens?
Yeah, after? That was fun. It turns out that he's been telling the whole movie to Bruce Banner the whole time. He's just telling the story, but poor Bruce fell asleep and missed everything, which is very amusing.
We think it's just narration for us, but it's revealed he's also talking to Bruce Banner, and it's like almost a therapy session where he's on the couch.
Right, and he's like, Bruce, I'm not that kind of doctor.
Yeah, that's not me. And he's like, where did you leave off? And he's like, elevator in Switzerland, which is like the very beginning of the movie.
In the movie.
So yeah, and then like I said, it shows the title card, Tony Stark will return. It doesn't say Iron Man will return, but Tony Stark will return. So it almost makes you wonder, in what capacity?
Right,
back in these movies, is he going to be some sort of consultant like originally?
Exactly.
But spoiler alert, Iron Man does return. He does come back in suits. He's with the Avengers.
This is unsurprising to me.
So
he was a pretty major part of the Avengers. I don't know. I know you said there will be different sort of leader types of the Avengers as these stories go on, and he's not like he felt more like a leader type in the first one, like one of the main.
Well, yeah, it sort of feels overall him and Cap are kind of co-leaders. I mean,
yeah, like together.
Cap seems a little more leaderly when they're in the first Avengers movie, where he's giving commands and stuff.
In the battle, he's definitely
That's where he excels. Yeah,
yeah.
But Tony's got the money to support the team, and he's got the brains. So yeah, they're basically. I think through the run of those characters being involved, I think they're pretty much basically kind of co-leaders. But yeah, that brings us to an end of this installment. Any final words? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I'll fold it into my holiday movie rotation. No, I probably won't. I do love a Christmas movie, but this might be a one and done for me.
Yeah, not sure if I'll revisit it again. This is my first time and maybe my only.
So what are we watching next week?
I think it's the second Thor, but I'm not 100% sure. You're not particularly psyched by
I'm not hugely into Thor. I don't know. I mean, I'll give it a shot, of course. My ability to remain open-minded is my superpower.
Okay, what we are doing next is Thor, The Dark World. That's what that is called.
It
is
what year was that? 2014?
It's also 2013. So these were the two 2013.
Well, they're just spitting them out. Okay.
Yeah, at different times they've had a lot in one year, sometimes slowed down a little, but these were the two films that were released in 2013. So Thor to the Dark World, second Thor movie. I don't want to say anything about it because I don't want to taint your opinion like this one.
Let it unfold.
Yeah, let it see where it goes. As always, thank you for joining me on this journey together. It's a lot of fun. I'm glad we're all on the same page. And until next time, thank you everybody for listening, and we will see you with Thor the Dark World. Thanks everybody. Take care. Bye.
See you next time.
Zack and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips. Featuring Penny Walliner. Edited by Zach Walliner. Theme music by Luis Humanoid. Cover art by Chris Giarusso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZACHTAVIEMARVEL. Thanks again for tuning in. Enough said.